Hi, I'm thinking of getting another tattoo to go with my raging dragon one.
Sure. What are you looking for?
Well, maybe something like a...
Bunnies! He wants a row of bunny rabbits with twitchy noses.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let others decide for you.
All holding giant flowers.
Who's that?
Ella. She works in the bank next door.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
Too cute. And write Sarah on it.
Cute? I'm a martial arts champion. And my boyfriend's name is Jack.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Oresmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona you the TV have, you know, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw on television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on the Indo Daily, the gossip columnist, the Taoiseach, and the 27-year-long affair. She was a fashion writer, social diarist, and columnist. He was Ireland's most controversial Taoiseach. Their affair was an open secret in society circles. But the rest of us were finally brought up to speed in 1999, when Terry Keane publicly revealed her 27-year affair with one Charles J. Haughey.
How long was the affair with Charlie Haughey?
I met Charlie Haughey about 27 years ago.
What was it that attracted you to him?
He was larger than life. He was very attractive. I mean, he is very attractive. Strong, clever, entertaining, amusing, irreverent.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Irish Independent columnist John Downing to refresh our minds of that very controversial affair. John Downing, Charlie Haughey, three-time Taoiseach, one of the great divisive figures of the Irish history of the last century. Terry Keane, a gossip columnist with several newspapers, including of this parish. They were both very prominent figures. How did they come to meet?
They met in January 1972 at Club Elizabeth's nightclub in Leeson Street in Dublin. It was at the time the late night place for politicians and journalists and the people attached to showbiz and business and all the rest of that together for a late night drink and dance.
Yeah, and they were both very much, obviously, you know, pillars of society, but mixed in kind of the same high society circles.
Absolutely. Terry Keane was, basically, she was a fashion journalist at one stage with the Irish Times, later the Irish Press, the Sunday Independent, and so on. In January 1972, Charlie Haughey, who had been Minister for Justice, Minister for Agriculture, Minister for Finance, he had been ignominiously driven out of frontline politics. He was languishing on the back benches. There was the 1970 arms trial about alleged illegal import of arms for use in the North. And he was acquitted, but he was in exile and basically kind of at a loose end.
Yeah, these are the Haughey's wilderness years as
Absolutely.
Such before he's brought back to frontline politics. And essentially, the two of them, they embarked upon an affair.
Yes, which there's a very amusing account of, you know, how she remembered their meeting. This is from Ryle Dwyer's book, Shortfellow. They were both in company of other people. She, who could be quite outrageous, had very sharp tongue, very witty, very funny, was generally slagging him and teasing him. And he took the hump and said, look, I don't have to put up with this. I'm going home. So then she said, don't go. I'll dance with you instead. So that was the start. And it was to last. That was January 1972. It ended rather calamitously in May 1999, 27 and a half years. And, you know, hard to dismiss it as an affair. It was, in fact, a relationship.
We met actually at a gathering in a nightclub. It was a sort of a dinner party. We'd all been at drinks in a friend's house, and we all moved on to this nightclub for dinner. And we sort of knew each other vaguely. That was really it.
And was it instant attraction that night, or did you dance together or talk together?
Well, it was instant attraction. I didn't particularly like him before that. I was sort of fairly indifferent to him, really. But that night, because one, I think that often happens, that you don't think about somebody until you're really sort of face to face, as we were that night, and started talking, and we danced together, and there was a very strong mutual attraction.
Yeah, how would one describe it? I mean, you have the kind of the French notion of the mistress, who, you know, politicians and business figures in France, this would be quite a frequent occurrence. But in Ireland, obviously, it's hard to really define or compare this to anything we've had before.
Well, certainly it wouldn't have been as much talked about, and certainly not in those times as it would be sort of common knowledge in France. He was a Francophile, of course, and loved all things French. And yes, it would have been usual, or not unusual, let's say, for a senior French politician to have a very orthodox home life, wife, children, etc., and then a sidebar relationship with a glamorous woman. He was a great man to compartmentalize his life. He had been married for over 20 years at that stage, and he had a number of children, but he kept the two separate.
As time goes on, Charlie Haughey emerges from this wilderness period. He returns to frontline politics, ultimately takes over as Fianna Fáil leader, becomes Taoiseach. And within that political career, there are a number of occasions where you'd say moral issues come to the fore, which would appear to contradict Charles Haughey's affair that he is having. Can we go through some of those?
I mean,
let me go through the contraception issue when he was Minister for Health.
When this became among the fallout from her revelations about the affair in May 1999, was accusations that Charles Haughey was a hypocrite because publicly he advocated family life. You mentioned contraception. In the late 1979 on, he was Minister for Health. And he brought through contraceptive legislation, which in theory meant if you wanted a packet of condoms, you had to have a doctor's prescription and a marriage cert. And he described it at the time as an Irish solution to an Irish problem. He was leader of the opposition in June 1986, when Garrett Fitzgerald ran a divorce referendum, which looked very likely to be passed. But Fianna Fáil's theoretical neutrality on that issue was in practice borne out by their campaigning and helping anti-divorce campaigners. And Charles Haughey, close to the polling day, made a long and famous statement about the need for family values and upholding family values, which, of course, later prompted people to ask, well, who's the values of which family, Mr. Haughey?
Yeah, he speaks at that time about an unshakable belief in the importance of having the family as a basic unit of society. My experience of life tells me this is the best way in which we organise a society. He goes on to say the family is an anchor for the individual, a haven of security and support. I give that as my purely personal view. Now, you could argue that that was a poorly structured referendum, that the Garrett Fitzgerald's government didn't deal with it, but it certainly wasn't helped by the fact that the leader of the opposition, the leader of the largest party in the country, was coming out personally opposing it. Did it delay divorce coming to Ireland for 10 years?
It did, yes.
So, what seemed unthinkable a fortnight ago, if pollsters and many observers were to be believed, has now happened. The divorce proposals brought forward by the government, with the one dissenting voice, that of Paddy Cooney, have been roundly defeated. It's almost a landslide.
We went from, that was June 1986, it was beaten by a margin of 2-1, so I suppose you couldn't hang it all on Charlie, to say the least. There was a huge gap about property succession and all of that, but it took us until November 1995 before we got divorce referendum very narrowly passed.
What about how widely known this affair was? It wasn't exactly the most discreet of relationships, was it?
It was very widely known all over. I mean, I started in local journalism in the early 1980s, and I was told pretty promptly that this was Charlie Haughey's situation, married man with an unorthodox liaison with another woman. It was the funny end of the British Secret Service tried very hard. There's a recent book about that. They tried very hard to try and use it as a smear. And they tried to use it particularly to stop him becoming Taoiseach. They had a theory that if Harold Wilson was Prime Minister and Charlie Haughey was Taoiseach, that things would go very wrong for the United Kingdom and the Union and Northern Ireland. It was well known all over Dublin, chatterati, journalism, politicians, anybody who went around in the fashionable watering holes, discos, nightclubs, etc. Very well known fact of God.
And at the same time, he was actually being referenced in Terry Keane's own columns.
Yes, she referred to him consistently as Sweetie, this mysterious figure in her life. There were also many references to Charles Haughey by name, and there were references to him in the office of Taoiseach, but she was, after all, writing a gossip column, so that would be par for the course. But there were these oblique and very thinly veiled references to Sweetie.
Yeah, and on occasion, she also was very defensive of him, but ostensibly on a political level.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I vividly remember her in the summer of 1986 going on RTE Radio, a morning show that was presented by Pat Kenny. And she castigated several political journalists and said they had a terrible down on Charlie Haughey and that they were basically incompetent and they got pretty much everything wrong. This was at a time when she was writing, I think powder blue is the colour for 1986.
What about the late 90s then? Now, Haughey goes out of power early 90s, some part of his past comes back to haunt him very famously. And throughout that decade, then more and more detail about his life comes out and his personal finances, €1.3 million from Ben Dunne. And we go into the period of tribunals. In the late 90s, their relationship sours.
Absolutely. We go particularly to May 1999. She had a deal for £60,000, Irish pounds, with the Sunday Times to write a kiss and tell memoir, as we always term these things. And to launch that, she was going to go on the biggest TV show in the Irish firmament at the time and give the whole thing a kick on the Late Late Show with Gay Byrne. It was it had an additional sort of cachet because it was among the last programmes that Gay Byrne actually did.
Yeah, second last show. It was the last show as remembered for it being his farewell,
his and one song,
the yeah. U2 coming on and giving him a Harley Davidson and so on. But this was one of Gabo's great interviews that people still remember.
Yes, it was the 13th of May 1999. She met Charlie Haughey some days before at Le Coq Hardy, a restaurant on Pembroke Road, about a 10-minute walk from Leinster House, where they had many trysts and meetings over 27 years. And she told him what she was doing. He asked her not to do it, But she went ahead anyway. And that was the last occasion that they spoke. I think in or about, from memory, in or about 10th of May, 1999.
Yeah, and also at that time, he seemed to be trying to put his own affairs in order by returning gifts and mementos that she had given to him over the years.
Yes, there are sort of two sides of justification as to why this happened. He was in very deep water with the tribunal. There had been the McCracken tribunal, and that was immediately followed by the Moriarty tribunal. They would certainly be looking at some of his crazy spending patterns, and in fact they did, because Le Coq Hardy, the venue for the breakup, the venue for so many other encounters, rendezvous over the years, it emerged from tribunal inquiries that he spent 15,000 euros there at one stage.
He was just sworn in when his lawyer interrupted, arguing that his client's dealings with AIB Bank were not part of the tribunal's investigation into the money trail, and that his right to privacy was greater than the public's right to know. The chairman disagreed, and Charles Haughey's massive overdrafts from over a quarter of a century ago were laid before him, begging his explanation.
He was conscious that such investigations were going to come and that he should try and tidy up the record as much as possible. He was facing at that stage an imminent criminal trial, the second of his long career, the other being in 1970 over arms importation. So he was certainly trying to prepare. Lots of things come out in cross-examination and witness boxes and so on. And the third issue he had was he had just been diagnosed with prostate cancer. So he wasn't at all sure how many more years he could look forward to.
Yeah, and Terry was part of this lifestyle that was revealed to people. Tell us about Charvet shirts and trips to Paris. And
Charvet
so on.
Shirts, yeah. There were many, many trips to Paris. They used to go to London, but they got quite leery. They disliked London because they were conscious of this media efforts to try and smear and use the relationship. So they far preferred Paris, sometimes Germany, sometimes the south of France. The Charvet shirts were outrageous. This shirt maker in Paris near his favourite hotel, which is the Hotel Meurice, where I once had the privilege of having dinner with him, or being among a company of people who had dinner there. But around the corner, shirts, thousands of pounds. She maintained she introduced him to Charvet, the shirt maker. But there was, yeah, a whopping bill came out in the tribunal investigations as well for Charvet shirts.
Of all the things Charles J. Haughey has been accused of, being a slave to fashion hasn't been one of them, until today perhaps. The tribunal revealed he spent thousands of pounds on French shirts made by one of the most exclusive makers. According to the company, they supply shirts of almost unbelievable elegance to the most demanding clientele in the world. Walking into their Paris shop is, they claim, an intoxicating experience.
In the wake of this Late Show revelation, what was the public reaction? Because as you say, everybody in certain circles knew all about it. Did the wider public have any notion of this?
The wider public very, very definitely didn't really know. Some people, there was a rumor for every day of Haughey's public life of all sorts, which did include that he was a bit of a boyo when it came to women. But the actual liaison, the details of it, the longevity of it, all that sort of stuff, no. The wider public did not know it. So it was quite a shocker.
At the same time, there's also two families. How did they receive this news at the time?
Well, it was very difficult for them. I actually had the privilege of covering Maureen Haughey's funeral in recent years. And it was a very sad occasion, but she came across as a very strong person, uniquely the daughter of a Taoiseach, Sean Lamass, and the husband of a Taoiseach. So it was very, very difficult for her. We're told that she told him when they discussed it, they got through discussions about it, and then she said, right, We'll leave it there. So his family, his sons and daughter, insist they never knew of it. And when challenged on that, such a length of time, for example, Terry Keane visited his island home adjacent to the Blasket Islands on Inishfickillon. And of course, so did his wife. And there were lots of meetings in Kerry where the Haughey family were very well known. So there were lots of meetings between Terry Keane and Charlie Haughey in Kerry and so on. So sometimes people said, come on, how could you not know, to the Haughey family? And they just insist, look, there was a rumour and there were rumours about rumours about rumours about our da, and we just learned to have the salt cellar close at hand and take it all with a large grain of salt.
Tell us about Terry Keane, her background and her entry into journalism.
Yeah, she was quite a character. I knew a journalist in Brussels, a guy called John Palmer, who knew her as a young woman. She was the daughter of an Irish couple but who lived in England for a long period. Terry O'Donnell, originally, her father was a doctor. And she was born in Surrey. She moved to Ireland to study medicine, but she quickly abandoned medical studies and gravitated towards fashion journalism. She was glamorous. She was very well liked. Quite a socialite, I suppose, was the phrase at the time, described by longtime friends as one of the kindest people you could ever meet, who was also capable of being utterly outrageous.
And she was married to somebody quite prominent as well.
She was married to an up-and-coming young barrister called Ronan Keane. Ronan Keane went on to be a High Court judge, a Supreme Court judge, and eventually the Ireland's Chief Justice, the most senior judge in the land. So obviously a very accomplished lawyer. At the time, in January 1972, when she and Charlie Haughey began their relationship, she had temporarily separated from Ronan Keane. They later got back together, sporadically on and off, and finally, quite a number of years ago, they separated definitively.
Tell us about the Keane Edge. What was her ultimate style of journalism? What would you read in her gossip column?
Well, lots of who was seen where, who was doing what, who had ambitions. A lot of people in journalism said, look, she doesn't actually write it at all. She just brings in the goods. It's actually rewritten. No big deal there. That can happen on occasions in the journalism trade, and particularly for a gossip columnist, being able to gain an entree into places where the ones who like to be talked about and people like to read about is far more important than being able to convey stuff on the page.
The affair ends, as you say, in 1999, and they never spoke again.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well established. They never uttered a word to one another ever again. One of the first things that happened was she got a reputed 60,000 from the Sunday Times, the London Sunday Times, Irish edition, and she got a 2-year contract at 50,000 per year to move her column from the Sunday Independent to the rival Sunday Times. And she auctioned a lot of the memorabilia, photographs and other gifts and other things. In September 1999, she put them up for auction. Poignantly, the day of the auction happened to be the 48th wedding anniversary of Charles Haughey and his wife.
The problem with a kiss and tell, as you say, is that once you've told it, it's out there and you can't put it back in the bottle. Terry Keane, she says she kind of came to regret it all, and members of her own family have spoken about this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was surprised that there was, but there was, of course, compelling curiosity, public curiosity. But there were also strong elements of saying that it was completely wrong and that it reflected very badly on her. She was left trying to justify why did she do this. She actually went back on the Late Late Show, again, this time fronted by Pat Kenny, in 2006, just 2 years short of her death and just after the death of Charles Haughey. And she said that she bitterly regretted it, but that it the 1999 tell-all thing, but that it came at a very difficult time in her life. There were three very difficult things happening to her. Firstly, she had been diagnosed with a heart complaint. Secondly, she'd had investments which went badly wrong. Thirdly, she felt that Charles Haughey was trying to get her out of his life. The other point was there was a strong rumour that a journalist was going to write a book called Sweetie, and she thought she'd better get her retaliation in first and get her version of events out there.
Yeah, and her son-in-law, Dermot Gavin, later spoke about this issue on another Gay Byrne hosted show, The Meaning of Life.
And she lived a full life. And when she went on the Late Late Show, we tried to tell her not to. You didn't help.
She had done a deal with the Sunday Times.
She had done a deal with people who she shouldn't have. There were people around her who flattered her and gave her bad advice. And she wouldn't listen to the other advice at the time. And it wasn't an easy situation for her family. I'm sure it wasn't an easy situation for her hubby. And I'm sure it wasn't an easy situation for all the rest involved, the Haugheys and or for Charlie.
Ultimately, John, do we look back on it now and does it join the pantheon of Irish love affairs, where there's a crossover with politics, Parnell and the English Woman, Michael Collins and Kitty Hearn and Maud Yeats and Maud Gonne, or where does this affair rest?
I suppose it is in that bracket, in that company, and I suppose it maybe needs some reappraisal in terms of it was still an era when women played very much second fiddle. There weren't very many women in Leinster House. Any women in government buildings were very much in secretarial tea-making roles. So I think it merits reappraisal on that basis, and a more feminist perspective.
My thanks to John Downing for joining me today. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode of The Indo Daily was produced and researched by Siobhan Maguire, with sound by Cian Sinnott. Archive clips from RTÉ's The Late Late Show and The Meaning of Life, RTÉ News Archive, TV3, Virgin Media News and Independent.ie. If you enjoy The Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow and leave us a review.